Folks, we're going to call the meeting to order. I appreciate your patience. We actually have the good fortune of following the Capital Investment Committee into this room, so I suspect that all session long, we are probably going to have the our poor special assistant who's rapidly disseminating information and paper. Welcome to Julia, by the way. She's new with us this year. We're happy to have her. You'll notice some additional staff changes. John Reich has moved into the committee administrator post, which is a great opportunity for him. Chris Kwapik is new to our committee. He's a committee legislative assistant. I think that is essentially our changes. I want to welcome everybody back to our committee. You will recall I have lots of rules, which is that there are no rules other than the golden rule, which is the chair is always right. We'll a quick roadmap of where things are at. We did basic intros. Today is essentially pro forma. We have a number of bills that went to the House floor that are now being returned to the committee. I actually had hoped that we could just return them to the House floor by memo, but we are going to briefly rehear them, repass them, and send them back to the floor. I would expect that however you voted last time when we gave these bills a more thorough hearing, you'll vote consistently. There is one bill, the minimum wage bill with Representative Rukavina, that has had, I scheduled more hearing with respect to that one because I couldn't discern whether or not it was a technical change or a more substantive change. There's been a slight increase, I think, that comports with roughly the rate of inflation. In terms of the numbers, I would anticipate that there will still be some back and forth with respect to that bill, but it's essentially a technical change that has a little bit more substance, and I wanted to give people an opportunity to be heard with respect to it. And already starting next Tuesday and then through the deadlines, we will begin taking up a pretty heavy list of bills one time after another. Couple of things to be aware of that are just reminders for folks that remember from last time. We don't take attendance in this committee. We're not a bunch of third graders. If you don't show up, you'll be automatically excused unless you call me and tell me you shouldn't be excused, at which time we'll, you know, find you in contempt or something like that. But otherwise, it'll be an automatic excused absence. Your save folder, make sure to try to use that. And if you can, we don't have a rule on amendments like some committees do. It's just a matter of courtesy to the staff. If you can get amendments in prior to, and with as much prior notice as possible, it makes everybody's lives a lot easier in terms of getting that information out. With that, that's kind of the overview. We've got a few meeting minutes, and we'll, no, I don't want to hear a GOP bill to start. That would be, no, I'm just, that's the tradition of the Commerce Committee, is to always hear a minority bill. Before we do that, however, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 minutes from March 20, March 22, October 4, and January 29. Representative Burns moves those minutes for us. Unless there's any changes, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. First up today, do we actually have a... we've got Representative Mahoney is on the committee. That's the first bill that we have scheduled, but he's on the committee. No offense, Representative Mahoney, but we've, and I know that you've got to leave briefly, but we've got a couple members. If you, with at your deference, we'll try to hear their bills relatively rapidly. But, well, it's some nice folks. Representative Gardner, if you want to join us, House File 1665. Chair moves at House File 1665. Is this going any place, guys? Going to the floor. The recommended to pass, Representative Gardner, any technical amendments to it before we move on to effective dates or anything like that?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. If you'd be so kind as to just give us a brief overview of the bill.
Very good. This will take about 2 minutes. I had a constituent who was trying to freeze his mother's credit report, pay the $5, and he found out that one of the credit bureaus would only accept payment by credit card. And if you are trying to freeze your credit report that has to do with your credit card, that would seem to be kind of illogical that you can't pay by some other instrument like a check. So this really allows you to pay by a check or any other instrument for your credit freeze report, and that's it. And I believe you asked me if there was peace in the valley on this last time, and I said that there was nobody in the valley, and that has still been the case. So that's it, Mr. Chair.
Sounds like Mike Cannavale. Unless there's further comments or discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1665 be recommended to pass and refer to the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Thank you, Representative Gardner.
Hope to see you again.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Representative Nelson is in the room. Come on down. You're the next contestant. House File 554. Chair recommends passage of House File 554. Be recommended to pass and move to the floor. Representative Nelson, if you can be briefer than Gardner, you'll be out of here even sooner.
This is a resolution for to send to Congress on the Employee Free Choice Act, and it passed out of here last year overwhelmingly, and hopefully it'll go the same way this time.
Wow, that was good. Unless there's questions or concerns, Representative
unless you want to see my 35-minute video.
Not so much.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think last time, and although I'm not happy about the subject there, it's nice to see we're back on commerce issues instead of bridges. So I renew our opposition to the resolution as a whole. If this is truly what we're going to be talking about is commerce-related issues, the resolution about federal legislation wasn't a big fan of that when somebody else was in control of the gavel. I'm not in favor of it now. Our committee members would like to get back to the work of Commerce Committee. If we could dispense with all the resolutions, it'd be great. Don't see that we need to vote on this again, but we'd voice our opposition to even having these things before us.
Fair enough. Thank you, Representative Zellers. Anybody else? Seeing none, Chair renews the motion that House File 554 be recommended to pass and referred to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Next up, Representative Loeffler has joined us. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. We will, Chair will move House File 765, be recommended to pass and refer to the House floor. Representative Loeffler, if you've seen Representatives Gardner and Nelson, you'll know what sort of length of your presentation we're speaking.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say I thank very much the support of the committee last time, and I would like to, though, make one minor amendment so that the bill is prospectively effective. I believe your committee administrator had the amendment. It's on line 19. Page 1, line 9, changing 2008 to 2009.
Fair enough. The chair will move that to put it in the shape that the author desires to move forward with it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that passes. Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate a positive action on this. The Department of Public Safety is working on a new computer system, starts in the pre-design stage right now, and we think that this is out of the planning, part of the planning going along with that planning that has been initiated already. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Unless there's questions or concerns, the chair will renew his motion that House File 765 be recommended to pass and move to the House floor. As amended. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that passes.
Thank you very much.
You're on to the floor with respect to that. Stay there, however.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, correctly.
This is just passed out. It's from Representative Zeller, and I just wanted to commend him on seeing that he understands that President Clinton has never lied and.
And so here we go, moving right along. House File 111. The chair will recommend or move House File 111 be recommended pass and referred to the House floor. And you, I see, you've got a technical amendment with respect to this one as well. It's HDA 514. The chair will move that. That is also a technical change affecting the effective date, moving it from 2008 to 2009. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the amendment passed. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your favorable action on this, and we expect the Senate will be considering it, and hopefully we'll get this enacted into law this year. So thank you very much. Appreciate it if you would send it to the floor again.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Is there anyone that desires to be heard with respect to this item? Yes, sir. If you'll just be kind enough to join us here at the table, identify who you are and proceed with your testimony. And welcome to the Commerce and Labor Committee.
Thank you. My name is John Tyler. I'm representing both Boyce and Tyler Financial Group, an organization which I co-own as an independent insurance agency, and Citizens Council on Healthcare, as well, which I serve on the board of directors. So those are my affiliations. Each of you has a file folder, and I understand this is intended to be strictly procedural, but I'd like to perhaps beg your indulgence a little bit and share some information with you if that would be all right. Regarding the, if I'm not mistaken, the preventive care mandate as far as health insurance, a high deductible health plan with regard to health savings account programs are concerned, I'd like to perhaps offer a little bit of perspective as I deal with prospective insureds for a living, both in cell service and assist individuals with health savings account programs, et cetera, high deductible health plans as well. And I'd like to respectfully, all right, Mr. Chair, take opposition with this march of the mandate that seems to be moving along with regard to the overall escalation of, especially for the individuals, health insurance premiums that is largely at least, or partially involved with the mandate that ever seems to be in every legislative session. If I could, Mr. Chair, I would like to just look at part one of my testimony, which is here on the faithful blue pages, my supporting documentation, as well. I'll take a look at who the uninsured are for just a moment. According to the Foundation for Health Coverage Education, Minnesota has approximately 7% of our population that is presently uninsured. Of that population, 41% are eligible for some publicly funded programs and for whatever reason choose not to participate. 32% of these uninsured happen to have incomes of $50,000 or higher. 11% are temporarily uninsured, and 16% are considered long-term uninsured, for example, immigrant population, et cetera. From these statistics, between 73 to 84% of the 7% of Minnesota's population of uninsured are quite reachable with regard to health insurance, if indeed that be the goal of the state of Minnesota. If there's a premium obligation to be made on the behalf of the individual, they are responsible for paying a premium. They are going to make a discernment as to whether or not what they are purchasing is a good value for their money. And if it is not a good value, then the marketplace will tell us by those who choose not to participate that they would rather not play the game, not be insured, than purchase what's available, either from the public sector or from the private sector, either one. The main complaint that I hear in the marketplace for those that are eligible for Minnesota Care, especially the adult population, is the maximum $10,000 in hospital benefit for most of the Minnesota Care eligible. That to them is not a good value for their money, and there is indeed a premium obligation on their behalf to purchase a plan that has a maximum $10,000 benefit, but it certainly pays nicely for eyeglasses and so on. In the last handout in your material, there's an outline here on page 8 of the Minnesota Care coverage set that shows you very clearly that it has a $10,000 maximum hospital benefit, which is not quite what catastrophic coverage, or comprehensive catastrophic coverage is about. Increasing mandates in Minnesota to comprise about 20% or better of the cost of an individual policy premium and is growing. Premium taxes also grow as a result of that. And I think I'd like to just make some suggestions based on perhaps rather than having mandates as far as health insurance is concerned, could we not consider options? Have a set of insurance options for people to choose from, including preventive care, if they choose it. But keep in mind, that's something I'd like you to know, is that preventive care coverage on an insured basis is readily available in the marketplace today from major insurers as an option. So rather than mandating premium situations, could we not have a mandated set of benefit options for people to choose from, to hope with the end result is providing something of value that people are willing to buy, whether it be catastrophic or whatever it is that they have. So I'd like to challenge this committee and this legislative session to come up with ideas, to work together to come up with ideas that would make it more valuable for people to purchase health insurance coverage better suited to their needs. And mandating something just means they have to buy it, whether they want it or not. Oops, well, it makes it too expensive. I'm out of here. I'm not paying the premiums anymore. The second part, on part two, on the second page of my testimony, I'd like to point out that preventive care services are a covered service from the health savings account. By definition, preventive care services are covered both by the insurance policy as a covered benefit and by the health savings account as a covered benefit. So adding a mandate on top of something that's already available to people doesn't make a lot of sense, especially if it artificially increases premiums across the board for those that are trying to buy and afford health insurance coverage. And so the argument that in order to have preventive care, it must be an insured benefit, was actually very, very much watered down with a study that Blue Cross Blue Shield did, nationwide study, on consumers that had high deductible health plans. And every level of utilization went down among consumers that had high deductible health plans, except preventive care services. That went up. The only area in the marketplace where preventive care services actually went up, based on that type of coverage that people had. That's because, by definition, it was already covered. And so the preventive benefit, whether it's covered by the health savings account or whether it's covered by the insurance contract, is largely irrelevant. It's still covered, by definition, by the Internal Revenue Code, out of the HSA on a tax-free basis. So loading up an HSA to cover preventive care that is already covered, that could increase premiums across the board, doesn't make a lot of sense with this type of a product. I think the emphasis that I would like to make here is that coverage options will lead to more insured lives. Just like with disability insurance, just like with long-term care insurance, are loaded with menu options. You can take it or leave it. You can take it or leave it. You can buy a Cadillac, you can buy an LTE, whatever. Preventive care is fine. If it's an option for people, it already is. So we don't need to duplicate that with a mandate. But I would like to respectfully, you know, suggest, if I could, that loading up an insurance policy with additional premiums that's going to price people out of the market is not quite where we necessarily want to go. This is the argument of getting preventive care. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sally, thank you. We appreciate you joining us today. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to this item? And without any disrespect, Mr. Tyler, this is essentially a pro forma. As you know, we had full testimony with respect to this issue and heard quite a bit of it last session. Before the bill was passed and moved to the floor. And I don't want to dissuade people from doing so, but that is my intention, is to move it back to the floor. With that, Representative Laughlin, unless there's anybody else, I'd like to give you a chance to respond briefly.
I just want to correct the record, because this actually doesn't mandate preventative care on high deductible policies. It just says that if you take the option of matching that with a tax advantage HSA, then you have to have preventative first dollar coverage, so that you'd still be able as an insurance agent to offer a high deductible plan without preventative coverage. It's just that if you choose to have the tax advantage, which I think in the first year was estimated to cost our state treasury $7 to $10 million in lost tax revenues, that we want to make sure it's good care, that when we're subsidizing it with tax revenues, that it actually is the kind of good care. And many people are buying it without any money in an HSA. They can't afford to save money. So I think there's some confusion from the last testimony. I'd appreciate your, again, supporting this and moving it to the floor.
And Representative Loffler, thank you again for the overview. Mr. Tyler, thank you for your input. I would invite you to come back. I think we've got some health care reform bills that are also going to be circling through this committee at some point, which will be first impression for this committee, so we'll take more testimony at that time as well. Unless there's anything further, the chair will renew his motion that House File 111 be recommended pass and referred to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Loffler. Appreciate your time. Representative Kahn, welcome back. Chair will move that House File 28, Senate File 599, formerly House File 828, be recommended pass and referred to the House floor. Representative Kahn, you've probably seen
it. Yes, I understand. It's new taxes overwhelmingly. I'm very sorry that I've lost my distinguished second author, former Representative Steve Bingham, who worked on this with me for many years. But I'm also following Representative Zeller's discussion of what he thinks about resolutions. But the groups who are working on this have asked for this resolution, and I think it's tested before, and the Senate passed it pretty overwhelmingly, so I'd just like to test it out again.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Is there anyone that desires to be heard with respect to this item? Any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, Chair will renew his motion that Senate File 599, formerly House File 828, to recommend a pass, move to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Appreciate your time. We are, normally we hear from non-members. I know Representative Mahoney, I think you have a 5 o'clock obligation, so I want to make sure that we hear your bill. Representative Mahoney will move House File 2805, restricted preliminary licenses, effective dates modified, just some technical language that he needs to get done. Representative Mahoney, if you want to briefly walk us through what you're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. No legislator likes to admit that another provision that was pointed out on the House floor by another member was correct, but it was. We had some problems with getting plumbers, restricted plumbers in cities under 5,000 registered within the 6 month window from the bill that was had the labor, the House File 1208, which was a big Department of Labor and Industry bill, and created a plumbing board, a high pressure piping board, and an electrical board. This bill that I'm carrying, 2805, extends that window of licensing for plumbers in cities under 5,000 from the date of enactment to October 1st, 2008. There was a problem with small town plumbers were supposed to have a bond of $25,000. We're finding out that many of them were not carrying a $25,000 bond. So this bill also gives the commissioner the ability to waiver that fine or delete the fine. And hopefully the commissioner uses that judiciously. Having said that, it's just an extension, opens up the window for the licensing one more time.
Fair enough. Questions or concerns for Representative Mahoney? Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, is there still a requirement for the bonding in place then?
Representative Mahoney.
There, Mr. Chair, there will be, there is the requirement for the bond now and in the future. This bill just allows these plumbers that were working in small towns that did not understand the law, didn't see the law, didn't have the bond, to get registered, get licensed, and then buy the bond, or buy the bond, get licensed, and gives the commissioners the opportunity upon request to lower that fine, which is a $500 fine. He has the ability to lower it to $450, $250, or to zero, depending on the circumstances. So from now going forward, there should be no excuse not to have that bond. We've got the PATC, the mechanical contractors, we've got the inspectors, we've got the department all ready to go with letters to these people saying that you have to register. We've got letters, and including in that the explanation of the requirement of a bond.
And just to follow up, and that was my question too, are they going to be notified, and how are they being contacted, or how are they being found so that they are notified?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, again, as I explained, the one thing I probably forgot was we'll have to have some legislators writing letters to small town newspapers highlighting that, and there is a form letter in my office for legislators to use in their small towns and newspapers. So hopefully, nothing's ever perfect. We're just going to do the best possible that we can. We've certainly gotten a lot of attention. I've been contacted by 31 of my fellow members in the House. how come you did this to me, and a few other things. So hopefully those 32 plus myself will be sending out letters to small town newspapers. We can only do so much. We've got to try to make sure everybody is aware.
Well, to that point, I think we've done plenty. I'm glad that we are doing this and doing a back off on it. And we as small town legislators have definitely heard from our small town plumbers, because they feel we really overstepped our bounds on this whole bill. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Simpson. Any other members of the committee that have questions or concerns? This actually appears an example of government engaging in some flexibility and taking into account real-world circumstances. You sure you want to do this? Could give us a
it is out of character.
Reputation, Mahoney.
It is out of character, but...
Well, it's an appropriate response. I know it's as a bill author, you hope that you pass the perfect bill, and sometimes you find out that it didn't quite work out so perfectly, so this is an appropriate response to it. Is there anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to it? Seeing none, Representative Mahoney will renew his motion that House File 2805 be recommended pass and refer to the House floor. All in favor say aye. I'm sorry.
Mr.
Representative Mahoney.
I believe that we should pass this to Finance.
Thank you. It will be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Bill passes. That leaves us with House File 456, Representative Rukavina, minimum wage increase and inflation index. I saw him. Here he comes. While we're waiting for him, the last time I went to Mass with the Archbishop, he actually was subbing for Father Mike at St. Pat's, and we appreciate that very much, but you started a little bit late, but you finished on time and you finished strong, so that's what you're kind of my role model for the Archbishop. We started a little late, but we're going to try to get done in good time here. Representative Rukavina, welcome to the committee. The Chair will recommend House File 456 be recommended to pass. And you are looking to go back to the House floor. Is that correct?
Chair, do I have the Senate file? Or is it substitute?
Senate file, 875.
And then,
you're right.
Chair, I believe your staff has
there is a technical
amendment A2 and a technical amendment to that with A4 on it. There. Would you have someone please move both of those for me?
They, I believe, are being distributed as... We have them in our file?
In the file.
Both of them? All right. The all members have the is it the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, and I would explain them if you want it first or
before. I'm happy to that'll put it in the shape that you want to yes. You desire to move forward with it. Yes. All right. The chair will move I'm sorry, I'm missing the number though. Is it the A2 amendment?
Yes.
And the A4 is an amendment to the A2?
Yes.
All right, we'll move the A2 amendment.
It's actually, Mr. Chair, an amendment to the House File 875. So I guess if you want, I can discuss the one first. And what it does, the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair, members, changes some of the numbers because of the year delay in passing this bill. It also changes the effective date because the federal, we had August 1st, and the federal minimum wage goes up on July 24th of both years, so we thought, why would there be a week there that we have to readjust again, and businesses and that would have to. So that just puts the date changes puts us in line with the federal minimum wage increases, and then the new numbers would go from 675 in the bill to 690 and 790 in 09.
All right. The chair will move the A2 amendment. Whether you agree or disagree, the point is to put it in the shape that the author desires to move forward with it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
All right. That motion carries. That's the A2 amendment. Representative Rukavina, what's your A4 amendment?
The A4 amendment just then takes care of the effective date and makes sure that, it is... that we don't have that lag between the federal, that weak lag. The second effective date is for the notification that's required on page 2 of the bill.
All right, fair enough. The chair will offer the A4 amendment, put it in the shape that the author desires to move forward with it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion passes. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't think, Mr. Chair, that you want me to take too much time. I have the Archbishop here to talk on the bill. It's 4-1, but I've got the Archbishop on my side. So as far as the opposition versus the proponents. But I will just say this. A couple of years ago when we increased the minimum wage, we were trying to keep up. And Minnesota's always been proud, I think, since I've been in the legislature since 1987, in paying our citizens above the federal minimum wage. And, you know, a couple of years ago, Archbishop Flynn was going to come and testify, but he ended up at Pope John Paul's funeral, and he wasn't able to, and I'm just glad that he's here today to help, because the last time I got help from Pope John Paul himself, but I won't go into that, because some of you have heard that story. So, Mr. Chair, unless there are any questions, so maybe we could take them after the Archbishop comes up to testify on behalf of the bill.
I think there's one question before the testimony, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I on that amendment, I'm reading it right. On the A2 amendment, at line, page 1, line 6, it has the page 1, line 22, after the second hour. Are we including, I'm only seeing 1 hour except for the deleted section. So did I miss something there? Is that correct? Correctly worded?
I think,
Representative Rukavina?
It would be after the 575 an hour there, and then it gets some put in there. That's
right.
What I understand. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Everyone's clear that it is. It's that there is a stricken symbol through the first word hour. You were talking about the changes after the second hour.
Mr. Chair, I asked several times research and upstairs, and they said it was drafted correctly.
Yeah, no, you're fine. I just wanted to make sure that all the members of the committee understood with clarity what the issue was. With that, are there any other questions, of just housekeeping and mechanical questions before we take testimony? Seeing none, Archbishop, welcome to the Commerce and Labor Committee. We're happy to have you this afternoon.
Thanks very much, Committee Chairman Atkins and committee members. And Representative, be careful of saying the Archbishop is on your side. He's not always a winner. I'm pleased to be able to be here today as you deliberate this very important issue. I believe that increasing the minimum wage is a matter of justice. If we believe that people have a right to employment and that they have a duty to provide for their own well-being and that of their family, we must also believe that workers have a right to wages and other benefits that are necessary to sustain life in dignity. It is true that the people of this state value hard work, but we also value the dignity of the worker. For me, that means that the life of the worker has to be spent doing more than work. Unfortunately, however, low wages are forcing people to work more than one job, sometimes two, sometimes three jobs. This is not a dignified life. True human dignity means that people not only focus on their material survival, but that they have time and opportunity to participate in their social, cultural, and spiritual development as well. Family life and participation in society are key to human dignity and important to our democracy. Therefore, workers should be treated as persons, not servants or factors of production. As the minimum wage has lost its purchasing power, it is hard to imagine that workers unable to meet their basic needs don't feel devalued. It may be tempting to oppose raising the minimum wage by dismissing the worker because they are teenagers or retired from full-time work or live in Greater Minnesota. First of all, this does not describe every minimum wage worker. But secondly, and most importantly, every person has unassailable God-given dignity. Even teenagers, and I, as I am about to find out, even the retired. Our long-standing belief in the dignity of workers is reflected in the fact that Minnesota does better than many states in several quality of life indicators. Throughout the years, Minnesota has made valiant attempts to support workers through programs like the subsidized child care and Minnesota Care. We need to continue this tradition by increasing the minimum wage in a way that demonstrates the value we put not only on work, but on our workers. This is a matter of justice, not charity. We need a wage floor that guarantees a measure of dignity. We actually need to return to a minimum wage that at one time helped people escape poverty. Increasing the minimum wage to $7.90 doesn't quite get us where we need to be, but it would be a significant improvement from where we are in the limitations of the federal minimum wage law. I thank you, sir, for this opportunity to be here, and I thank all of you for your public service and wish you God's blessing as you continue in this important work of deliberation. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Archbishop Flynn, and thank you on an unrelated topic. Thank you for your service to our community, our state, our region, and God bless you and our best wishes in your retirement.
Thank you so
much. We hope it goes well.
Thank you.
Now, I understand, Representative Rukavina, there's some folks that don't like your bill as much as the Archbishop, and they might have a few words as well. If y'all want to, I don't know who's
Mr.
coming down
Chair,
first. But
can come, and the Archbishop will pray for them, I'm sure.
Representative Rukavina, we just hope he's praying for you. Those most in need. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thanks for the opportunity to talk today about this bill, and it's nice to be before you again this year. My name is Dave Dietrichs, and I work for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and we are here today in opposition of this bill. Because I testified against this bill last year, I'll be brief in my comments today. The Chamber opposes this bill for four principal reasons. Number one, we believe that the state minimum wage should conform with the federal minimum wage. The federal minimum wage went up 70 cents last July, and it's scheduled to go up another $1.40 in 2 70-cent increments over the next 17 months. We also do not like the inclusion of an inflationary index in the minimum wage, the exclusion of a tip credit, and the exclusion of a service wage. And with that, Mr. Chair, I know you appreciate brevity in this committee. I will conclude my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Dietrichs. I do appreciate brevity, unless it's me, of course. But thank you very much for your comments. And I should point out, with respect to these bills, because they were before this committee last session, I gave the Archbishop a little bit more leeway because he wasn't able to be with us, unfortunately, last time. But if you've testified before, please understand that your comments remain before the committee. You're welcome, in light of the fact that a year has gone by, to further those comments at this time, however. Again, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to testify in front of the committee. I did submit some written testimony, so I will be brief. I did also intend on having one of our restaurant operators here, but it is Valentine's Day, the busiest day of the year for many of our operators, so they couldn't be here, but they wanted me to make sure you all knew that you can take your sweethearts out to a fine dining establishment this evening or tomorrow, whenever you have the opportunity. The only thing, what I would like to add just to my testimony from last year is, if you look in the written testimony, there's a bar graph that just kind of illustrates restaurant job growth over the previous 16, 17 years. You can see that the restaurant industry was really a driving force behind the Minnesota economy for many, many years. And in 2002, 2003, you'll see that while many industries were shedding jobs, the restaurant industry was adding jobs. But since the 2005 minimum wage increase, the full-service restaurant industry has actually lost jobs. And again, it's a tough environment right now for restaurants. Commodity prices are up, energy prices are up, discretionary income among consumers is down. And we just believe that this is a bad time to be increasing wages in the restaurant industry. And I guess I will conclude with my remarks as submitted.
Thank you once again. Appreciate your time and your comments this afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chairman Atkins and members of the committee. I'm Jamie Poole, President of the Minnesota Grocers Association. We're a trade association that represents nearly 1,200 food retailers, distributors, and manufacturers. Our member companies employ over 60,000 union and non-union Minnesotans. We support fair wages and benefits for our employees, and a competitive labor environment keeps our wages current nationwide. The MTA supports keeping minimum wage in line with current federal law. We are concerned with uncontrolled and unrestricted annual increases to entry-level employees with no regard to skill level or tenure. These types of increases in minimum wage are very detrimental to Minnesota's small independent grocers. This bill could eliminate entry-level jobs and place a greater burden on all employees. Government rightly protects minors from doing specific jobs in grocery stores. However, eliminating the training wage while increasing minimum wage means stores must either pay a minor to do more for less work than an adult, or eliminate jobs for teens altogether. We'll keep it brief. In conclusion, we do not support this bill and ask that Minnesota remain in line with federal increases. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Cole. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to this item? Representative Rukavina, come on back. You get the final word, which you're, one way or another, you always manage to find a way to get the final word anyway.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I just came back to see if there's any questions from the committee members, and to emphasize, even though I have a list of where Minnesota is right now, we have 31 states, I believe, above us right now. And our small employer puts us down, I think, at about 42nd. So I think it's necessary, and it's time to do it. And as the Archbishop so eloquently said, you know, people shouldn't have to, should have time to spend in their lives with their family besides working two and three jobs, which a lot of these people have to do to make ends meet. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your support. And
thank you, Reverend.
Any questions?
Right off the top, I noted, by the way, it didn't come out of your breast pocket, the form that you were using. I'm not comfortable with that.
But I do. I don't have my legislative agenda with me. I just have one paper to show the Iron Range delegation where things are.
Yeah.
So,
it won't be long, and it'll be bulging.
But filled up. My file is building up.
Where would this change put Minnesota on that list of 50?
In 2009, if no other state increase their minimum wage, we would be, we would have seven states above us. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We would be seven. Our small employers would still be down below states like, we would be about 40th for the small employer.
My recollection, though, is there were a number of states taking up minimum wage bills last session. How many passed?
There are, but that's in 2009. In 2008, I didn't do the calculations, but we just have a number of states that would be above us, quite a number.
Okay. Thank you. I'm not sure who was first over here. I know Representative Paulson, then Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Rukavina. And I know it sounds like we're going to move different in the state rankings based on if this bill passes and becomes law. And I know you're not an advocate for tip credit by any means, but, I mean, there are 43 states that do use the tip credit and counting your tips as a wage. And I'm just curious, I mean, you know, to make progress on this legislation, I mean, the governor seems to have sent his signal that that's something he would want to have in the bill. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your feeling would be, I mean, to have something actually passed in the law versus kind of running this up the flagpole and having a confrontation with something that's not going to really go anywhere. Because I think as you... You know, your passion is about jobs, and you know, we've received some emails on this committee about some of the restaurants that have had some difficulties, even if closed shop in Cloquet, for instance. I mean, that's 45 jobs gone and lost with Grandma's closing. And as the Archbishop mentioned, I mean, you want to be able to have these jobs for people, but if the company's closed, the jobs are gone. And it's happened in Plymouth, it's happened in Cloquet, and apparently Grandma's is having more difficulty even in Duluth and other cities. And I'm just wondering if you would entertain that notion if we come to the floor with the tip credit, if the governor would be supportive of your efforts, if you would support that.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and Representative Paulson, I didn't get elected to the legislature to take something away from people that really don't make a lot of money. And as I said in the past, I don't think anyone sitting at this table ever told their children to go into wages. I was going to have or being a waiter or waitress. I was going to have a waitress here today, and I don't know if she didn't show up. That has worked 41 years in the industry to make ends meet. But even if you look, and Representative Paulson, one other thing, part of your question, 2 years ago the governor sent me a personal letter saying he would veto the bill if the tip credit stayed in. He didn't do it. I'm hoping that both his political aspirations and maybe perhaps a little divine intervention again will convince him that he won't veto the bill again. So whether he, you know, he said that in the past, but he backed off on that then. And finally, using figures from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the median wage in the 7-county metro area for a waiter, waitress, is $8.13 an hour. And you know that a lot of them don't work full-time because people don't eat at certain times of the day. And so they're doing other things and not making any tips. So that's my comment on it. I think the other 7 states, I believe, that have it, or 8, the tip, that don't allow a tip penalty, like Minnesota, are on the right track, and I'm hoping that other states would realize that. But I guess that's my comment.
Well, Chairman, Representative Brookley, I know you're a very reasonable guy, so I just hope you'll keep an open mind on that as we go forward, and you know, to make sure that something you're a strong advocate for actually comes to fruition and becomes law.
Thank you, Representative Paulson. I think there are other factors too that I won't get into, like smoking bans and things like that, that have also affected the restaurant industry, and I didn't support that either. And I think you were with me on that,
Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think just a few comments that I have to make as sitting here and listening to this. And, you know, I've hired hundreds of students throughout the years, and adults, senior citizens, and, you know, many kids have come into my operations at 16 years old. They won't even look an adult in the eye. They're so bashful. They're so timid. And we've taken those students, and we've helped them get through that. We've made them mature. We've put them out in the public. And the thing that I see in this happening is in rural Minnesota, this is cost shifting, folks. You know, I own retail grocery stores, and I guarantee you that I have to make a profit to keep the doors open. And if I get increased cost of operation, which we're just being bombarded with right now, with freight costs, with utility costs, and now with increased labor costs, I guarantee you that I will cost shift. So that means I will raise the price of milk, I will raise the price of bread, my competitor will do the same thing. So if you think that you're gaining ground on this, you're not. You're just making the circle bigger, and it just goes round and round. You will see a cost shift as you move forward with this, and I firmly believe that.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina.
Representative Simpson, you are one of the nicest Republicans I know, and I sincerely mean that. And you do know what it takes to run a business. I know that. And you're a nice guy. And I don't disagree with anything you said. We shift costs all the time. I realize that when a minimum wage goes up, the price of a hamburger is going to go up a little bit in the restaurants, and the price of a bottle of beer or whatever is going to go up with it. I have no disagreement with you, but I'm hoping that society realizes that, you know, that and accepts that. And I think the polls across this country show that the American public and Minnesota public supports the minimum wage increase and is willing to pay for it.
Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the one of the other things that the governor included in that letter to you, Representative Rukavina, was the annual indexing provision that I believe is in this bill as well. And as you were mentioned earlier on the smoking ban bill, you're never afraid to take a vote. And unfortunately, with that indexing, as I understand it, it's just going to keep going up. And I did do some calling. You're right. The metropolitan area, what it's going to do to some of our folks, I called around the metro, even not just my district, and looked at food services, anywhere from $7.25 to $8 starting. Retail goes up almost to $9.50. The grocery industry is $7 to $9 an hour. So in our area, it could be probably easy for us to just say it goes into effect, no big deal. But going forward, if it's true what they say, the economy's on a bit of a hiccup or a downward slide, whatever it is, with this with the indexing provision in there, we're in a down economy, it's just going to keep going up. I mean, what are we going to do to jobs then?
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, Representative, by the way, you're a pretty good guy too, but I won't say you're one of the nicest Republicans I know, but you know, many states now have indexed and through both constitutional and statutory laws have indexed the minimum wage. But You know, I actually had a nice conversation with former Speaker Swiggum the other day, who's now the Commissioner of the Farm and Labor and Industry and has met with a lot of the groups that are proposing this increase and some of the groups that were opposing this. And I told him, you know, you guys know I can be pretty boneheaded, and I probably am boneheaded at times, but I also know how to cut a deal and how to compromise. And as this bill moves forward, my goal is to get an increase for the people of the state who go to work every day, do the things that none of us at this table want to do, and do it for next to nothing. That's my goal, to help them put a little more change in their pocket. And so if I've got to compromise, there are certain things that I might be willing to compromise. I'm not saying right now that that's one of them, but I'm going to be very reasonable on this, because the bottom line is I want these people who work so hard for all of us doing things we wouldn't do to be able to have a little more change in their pockets so that life is better for them and their kids. And so if I've got to do some compromising, I will do it, but I'm not going to compromise at the expense of these people and the people that are representing them out here in the audience today. And maybe the answer is to put it to the voters like you did today. Maybe that's the answer too, because I know that would pass overwhelmingly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rukavina, I do appreciate that. And there's a couple other bills that would probably be a good idea to put to the voters, too. I think Representative Seifert had one that he thought might be a good idea to put to the voters. And I do, you know, Manny Word, I know you're going to be willing to talk and negotiate. But just, to me, it's real important that we don't, I've had some of these jobs. I've worked for minimum wage in college before in high school. I was one of those kids that Representative Simpson hired. And I was too shy to be nice or mean at that point, but I just want to make sure that we aren't doing exactly what Representative Simpson said and what Representative Paulson pointed out, was that we're going to push so hard that we're going to lose the jobs. And yeah, the jobs in the metro area will stay, or people will keep moving down here, but for those that like to stay in greater Minnesota, rural Minnesota, that those jobs aren't eliminated up there and everybody comes down here. I mean, I'd like people to stay where they want to live, not where they have to live and make a wage.
Is there anyone else that has any comments? Representative Rukavina, final word?
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dillaforce.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. You know, Representative Rukavina, I would agree with you wholeheartedly that working families are having difficulty keeping up. They're working harder and harder just to tread water, essentially. I think one of the issues we have here is we're only looking at one side of the equation, and that's the revenue side of that pocketbook for those hardworking folks, and not the expenditure side. For example, whether you're rich or you're poor, you know, you got to heat your house in the winter. This body has passed renewable energy mandates, for example, with other prohibitions that have made energy more expensive, for example. There are other areas where we have mandates that are making it hard. Whether you're rich or you're poor, you have to eat, for example. We have ethanol mandates that have made milk and egg and cheese and other staples of life expensive. I know you could get 2 gallons for $5 at the Festival Foods down the street from me. Now it's $4.65 for a gallon of milk. So as we talk about justice issues and about how hard it is for families to stay ahead, I hope at some point, especially my colleagues in the majority, we take a look at the agenda here and take a look at what's happening on the expenditure side of the ledger for hardworking families as well, and how we have increased costs that everybody needs to share. For example, as I mentioned, heat, food, gasoline is another one. Most people I know, you got to take the car to get to work or the bus or to get to the doctor's office. So I hope there's an opportunity to work on some of those issues as well going forward.
Thank you, Representative LaForce. Any other comments, questions from members? If not, Chair will renew his motion that Senate File 875 be recommended to pass as amended to be referred to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Madam.
That concludes our agenda. We will be back on Tuesday, February 19th at 4 o'clock. Thank you all for coming.